that it does, to some extent, without a question, reflect on the leadership, and I very much appreciate what is being done there, what can be done in the French-speaking areas, too. I would draw your attention, of course, since it was not mentioned, that when we speak of French and English, we do not define altogether nationality in the English-speaking area. If you ever go to the Church of Winnipeg, you have to look hard far to find the physiognomy from the British Isles. There are areas there with a significant German and Ukrainian, or Tyrolean German and Ukrainian background. And in this sense, Canada is a remarkable country, as is the United States, with a significant Asian element developing in the West, a significant Italian element in the borderlands, anyway, of the French-British speaking area. And I better not say anything more without consulting Mr. McCullough further. But I am aware of these large nationality blocks in the minorities that are there. It is sometimes easier, you know, as God looks down, to call Italians out of Canada than out of the boot of Italy. And that's exactly what has taken place. We have two brothers here whose ancestors come from Greece, and it's easier to call people from Rhodesia who speak English of Greek background than to call them out of Greece, that is, as it is presently set up. I will take a moment here and ask, I saw them before and do not know where they are at the moment, but I would like the Pivolos brothers to make themselves known in some way wherever you are. Thank you. They're in the middle of this section over here, neatly dressed. I mention that because their father is in the business of pressing clothes in Rhodesia. And my wife and I were guests in their home. I mention this because some of you may not always know who is in our midst. And if you would like to be updated on the state of affairs in Rhodesia, so far, all of our brethren are safe. I have asked questions about that briefly before services. But there is always the potentiality of problems in a crisis area. And we must not forget the ongoing crisis there, even though Iran has taken precedence in the world news columns. There's a special announcement I should like to make, since it was not written for the regular announcements. We have in our local congregations three, a regular Bible study in the auditorium Friday evening, and two of the congregations are basically responsible for the arrangements before, during, and after the Bible study. Involves ushering in more. It covers some fundamentals on a topic partly addressed before. It is in connection with the question that was one of the list of six that out of this past Dr. Stavridis in a class which he asked me to take for him and in his presence this last Friday. There were certain technical questions. The last one is, why do we in the ministry have so many questions? And I explained that, which is not what I'm talking about here, but the other was, which I would like to talk about, and where are we in prophecy in terms of time sequence? When we ask the question, where are we in prophecy? We are focusing in on a question that has come to my attention more commonly than other questions in terms of oral conversation. I, in a sense, had a question based on this theme this afternoon before services. I would like to introduce this theme with an awareness as to where we are in the 20th century. I think that that will help us understand how to evaluate material, or to put it in other terms, where we If we want to know where we are in prophecy, we of course need to know what is prophesied. We would have to know something else. Where are we in terms of the passage of human history? And then what are the events that are occurring? Now you could ask the question with all the prophecies about the day of the Lord, if you're in 500 A.D. Now in A.D. 500, you'd ask the question, where are we in prophecy? And you could quote all these passages about the tribulation and the day of the Lord, but it really wouldn't mean that much for that day unless you knew something else. That is, where are we actually in the sequence of human experience overall, as distinct from merely the events of the time of the end? And then, necessarily, what is taking place in the world that would enable us to link up where we are in human experience to the events listed in the Bible? Now, I may want to continue something if I have the chance, and there's no alteration in Bible study next evening. But I would like to, at this point, on the basis of the time that we have, introduce a matter that we should know a little more about in order to be sure of ourselves. First of all, we are generally familiar with two primary books of the Bible that pertain to a framework of prophecy, Daniel, Revelation. We pick these out because they are different from the other prophets, who often give a broad perspective of events without any major or significant time frame. I want to introduce you, so that we are sure of ourselves, to an interesting statement that we have often overlooked and not dwelt upon in the book of Revelation. In the 17th chapter of the book of Revelation, we have the story of the beast. And in verse 11 it says, "And as to the beast that was and is not," it actually is an eight, but it does belong to the seven. So I'm going to start out with an enigma here in verse 11 of chapter 17. And this beast, of course, goes into perdition. Most of us have read over this. I've never actually thought of its meaning. But I will start our view of where we are in prophecy in order to understand or have us grasp that there are things that occur on the world scene that we're not always immediately prepared to realize. That we focus in on some things that have not focused in on other things. And if we see what we have not seen here, we might also be prepared to see other things happen in the future that now in 1979 we are not yet prepared to see because it doesn't seem logical. My message, therefore, in a sense, is that we need to open our eyes to realize that not everything that shall be has already been made known in and through the church. We need both a long-range and a short-range view, a far-sighted and a very closely focused view. To start out at this point in this chapter, we presume that if any of you are relatively new, you have some grasp of the number of prophecies in both Daniel and Revelation. Now, there is not time, nor is it fair to the brethren who have heard messages on this for a long time, to repeat it. But let me summarize and state that although human experience is approaching a 6,000-year history, there is a sequence of events recorded in the Bible that is twofold since the flood. One is the history of a church that became a nation and then two nations. Story of a people who God called children of Israel, that is, the children of the man, or Jacob. This people became a nation, and finally two nations. Not until the close of the history of the separate nation of Judah, one of the 12 tribes,
do we have the beginning in Daniel and then in Revelation of a sequence of powers that God is dealing with that are not immediately descended from Jacob, though they may at times include branches of the family of Jacob within their political domain. But we deal essentially with nations whose leaders descend from the Goyim or the Gentiles. And in this system, there were a number of prophecies about nations such as Babylon, Medo-Persia, the Greco-Macedonian realm, and the Roman Empire. We won't go into that except to note that in any history book you may read the story of the impact of the Tigris-Euphrates, the impact of the Persian or Iranian highlands. News Today talks about the Sumerian, the impact of Southeast Europe, the Greek world, the impact of the boot of Italy, let's say this whole boot, not just the heel. And from there on, we have the story, not of the pagan Gentile nations, but the story of a series of nations, empires, who have as a religion what is called Christianity. And uniquely in this system, there are said to be seven horns, or seven heads, depending on what particular prophecy you look at. In other words, and I will summarize it here, we have had a reason on the subject, that after the fall of the Roman world in the West in 476, we should expect a period of revivals. And in these revivals, we find religion playing a significant role. And so in Revelation chapter 17, there is a beast that is described with a woman riding, with a woman, a symbol of the church. This is all basically a repetition for most of you brethren. In Daniel, there was a beast that had a certain number of heads and horns. In Daniel chapter 7. In Revelation 13, you have something very similar. Now what we know is that the Seventh-day Adventists differ from the Church of God, and I mention them because they have more knowledge of this than any other major group than the Churches of God through history. They in fact wrote away. Their view is that the revivals following the collapse of the Roman Empire, as we understand it, are not what Daniel was talking about, but the various nations into which the Roman Empire was then divided. I would only state simply that any history of, or any geography, or any atlas of Europe would show that at no time consistently has the Western Roman world been divided into 10 or 7 nations. Right now, we could easily see that ourselves. I would only count today, just so you understand my premise, that in the Iberian Peninsula that belong wholly to Rome, you have Spain and Portugal, and then of course you have Italy itself and France, and you have Switzerland and Austria, you have West Germany, you have Holland and Belgium and Luxembourg, and you have England. And you have part, certainly, of Yugoslavia, and I'm at 11 or 12. And the Roman world included also Hungary. It included Romania. And in history, we don't have a true fulfillment. That's not what the Bible is talking about. It is talking about a sequence of nations called empires or restoration. That is, you don't move from Babylon to Persia and Greece and Rome to the divided nations, few or many, but you go through a system that is a continuation of the Roman system. And here we have something unique. The Church of God has addressed the question of seven, but has never really addressed the question of the eight. And I want to start out with this because it is important for some people need to understand what has occurred in order to have minds open to what may yet occur. Everywhere the Bible is talking essentially about the interplay of a political and a religious system. A woman that is a church dominates only seven, not eight. Now let us look at the picture itself. In the sense that Revelation chapter 17 is giving us a picture of relatively recent times, we will now take note of the following. After the fall of Rome in AD 476, Western Europe was divided among three barbarian groups who represent three of ten. There were horns, and three were uprooted. This is from Daniel 7. And those three, of course, were the Heruli and allies, the Vandals and allies, and the Ostrogoths. These are the primary groups that restored government, coinage, political structure of the Roman world, but over which a great church, we now know, the Roman Catholic Church, did not dominate. These three non-Catholic or Aryan Gentile groups lost their identity when the fourth horn came to prominence and dominated in Western Europe. And that was the first of the seven that survived. And those horns and Daniel, in a sense, become later heads in the book of Revelation. This is explained, and I will not explain it today because it is asking too much of brethren who are already aware. But what the church has pointed out is that through history there have been a number of restorations in Europe of the Roman Empire. I have some books which I could not show you in a large audience unless we had a screen. Sometime perhaps we could, where we pass interestingly from the Roman Empires to those of Western Europe in the sense of restorations. Thus we pass from the Roman Empire to the old Roman Empire to the restoration in the West by an Eastern Emperor, Justinian, in 554. The first restoration in the West in which the dominant religion was Catholic. The Catholic Church of God was that which began in 554. Its collapse occurred over a period of time. The Eastern Empire continued to survive. Remember in Daniel chapter 2, there was an image with two lakes. The East is the one lake, and the West is the other. Now in the West, this restoration collapsed, and the popes in Italy were casting about for another power, they of the Byzantine Empire in the East, to restore Rome in the West, and they came upon the Franks. And there were East and West Franks, meaning the German and the French, peoples along the Rhine. And it was the Frankish people, the first people outside of Italy now, who were called upon to restore the Roman Empire in the West. So the second restoration, or the fifth of the ten original horns, which you know there were three uprooted by the special horn, which is the Vatican. And this one, in other words, is the second restoration of the seven that remained, on which this woman symbolically the prophecy dominates. What we learn now is that the German nation, the French nation, in the name or the person of the French, so the free people, what the word Frank originally derived from, who lived along the Rhine, became the focus of the new restoration. And this occurred in the capital, in the city of Aachen in Germany, but the center of geographic power was in Gaul or France. And hence the leader of this period of time is called Charlemagne in English, meaning Charles the Great, or Karl der Große. And we are dealing with a person whom both French and Germans claim as their own. This was the second restoration following the first, which was Justinian. Then we come to a unique situation. We come to a restoration of the Roman Empire after the collapse of the Frankish realm. And this was achieved in an area where the greatest source of power, of resistance to Charlemagne occurred and was finally brought into subjection to Rome. This was the Saxon or northwest area of Germany. And so we have a third restoration. And you can note that this is the second non-Roman people. We are dealing with the bulk of the non-Frankish Germans who were called upon to restore in 962 the Roman world. The person of Otto the Great. This is now the third restoration. It collapsed in 1254 with the execution of the child emperor. There was now, interestingly, a unique feature that we have not fully addressed or faced. And since we have a number of people who go out from us, who suddenly begin to study their Bible for the first time and discover that we have not always said what they read, assume that we were not telling them what occurred. So I'm prepared to tell them what occurred because it's all in the Bible. If we have never said it all, we've just never taken the time, but you were responsible for reading about it anyway. The Roman Empire, this third restoration that collapsed in 1254, was unique. Carefully, it was unique because, from our point of view, we would differ in history as to its meaning, and yet the Bible implies that both the historic view and our view are incorporated in its pages. The government ceased. This third restoration, as far as a government over which the church could rule, was destroyed. The church itself. It brought about the cessation of the government. But the empire as a geographic entity was not destroyed from the outside. It was only destroyed from within, and there was a period of 19 years, 1273, when we have what is called the Fifth Law. That is, there was no emperor. There was only the law of the fist, and he who could hit the highest came out best. It was a time of anarchy. Within the confines of the Roman Empire, from this point of view now, let me tell you, that the Roman Empire saw itself as in anarchy, but not cessation. And therefore, when the Habsburgs were placed on the throne of this empire, to those who were within and a part of the system, this was indeed a fourth governmental restoration. But only the third empire. And did you hear me clearly?
did it all, so I will repeat it. Repetition is good. Until it becomes boring. Justinian restored the Roman Empire in the West, and both geographically and politically it ceased. After a period of time. We're not dealing with a series of dates. You can read about this in history. If I bring some dates in, they are for reasons. In 800 AD, the second geographic and political governmental restoration occurred by Charlemagne. In 962, the third restoration by Otto. That restoration continued through several dynasties until the empire lost its government but retained its territory. That is, it was not destroyed by other nations coming in and taking over the land. The third restoration by the Ottos of the German nation, from our point of view, ceased in 1254. The government ceased. Yet the empire continued because there was no nation that occupied the area. When we say there was, therefore, with the Habsburgs in 1273, following 19 years of total civil war, the restoration of the empire again, we are correct. This was the fourth restoration of the government, but it was within the confines of the geographic boundaries of the third restoration. It was the fourth restoration of government within the confines of the third restoration. Now let me add one more fact. From the German point of view, Justinian's empire was a Byzantine empire in the west, and Charlemagne's was a Franco-German. From the German point of view, the first true empire of the Germanic nation without a significant French element was that of Charlemagne. And since the Germanic people, being Germany and Austria, as brother nations, from the German point of view and from history, the first German restoration of the Roman Empire in 962 did not cease with the destruction of the government in 1253, but was looked upon as continuing all the way through the realm of the Habsburgs. To the days, clearly, to the days of Napoleon. From the German point of view, the first empire, the Holy Empire, the Roman Empire, they never used the term Holy Roman, the historians do, but the official documents define it as the Roman Empire, the Holy Empire. This was an empire of the German people in which there was an interim of 19 years of civil war between 1254 and 1273. I made it slip. In the biblical account, this would be regarded as two of the horns in Daniel chapter 7. It would be regarded as two of the horns in Revelation 13 and two of the heads in Revelation 17. But from another point of view, it is only one. Because geographically the empire remained in possession of a specific area of territory and neighboring nations did not devour it. But the woman sits on the government. And in this sense, there was a new restoration with the Habsburgs. It was the fourth restoration in the West. but it was followed by Napoleon's fifth. But I draw attention to what is unique from the German point of view. There was only one empire from the days of Otto to the days of the Habsburgs in the time of Napoleon. But counting from our perspective, and the biblical perspective, we have passed through four governments. But if you please, three empires. That is probably as simple a way to explain it as possible. Four governments and three empires. Until we come to Napoleon. This is now the fifth government. And Napoleon wanted to be crowned by the Pope, but was a little impatient and took the crown from the Pope and crowned himself. This was the fifth restoration. And the book of Revelation speaks of five that are fallen, and one is and one was yet to come. We read this in Revelation 17:9. This calls for a mind of wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains, mountain symbols of government on which the woman is seated, and they are also seven kings, five of whom have fallen. One is, and the other has not yet come, and when he comes, he must remain only a little while. Now, from this perspective, we have a general understanding. For those of you who don't have wisdom, you should pray for it. For those of you who do, you already grasp the general picture. That is, that this chapter is telling us of events that happened after Napoleon, when we have a new view of a system. This beast of Revelation 17 is a beast made up only of the restorations of the Roman Empire. Daniel's beasts are the whole sequence from Babylon. Revelation 13 is the old Roman Empire with its sequence. But Revelation 17 begins after the old Roman Empire, only with its Western restorations. Only with its Western restorations. And at the point where we should take special note of this beast, five have already disappeared. One is, and one is yet to come. And in this sense, there is a beast meaning the whole system, and there is also a beast meaning the last man, or the last restoration. Now, as for the beast that was and is not, it's an eighth one, but it belongs to the seventh. Now, this has two possible meanings, and I'm going to then briefly refer to only one, and then explain another that we haven't understood. This beast is actually a part of the seven that were left after the three horns were uprooted. This beast is a part of the seven, belongs to the seven. After three horns were uprooted, you remember in Daniel chapter 7, the Vandals, the Ostrogoths, and the Heruli were uprooted. This beast is a part of the system, making up the other seven horns that were left. But it also is an eighth. The eighth one is peculiar because the focus of this system, which is this is the system that lives the closing time, it actually is an eighth one. Now there were seven heads altogether in Daniel. Remember, one of Babylon, one of Persia, four of Greece, and one of Rome. And this system is a part of the Roman one, and yet it is a separate system, so in that sense, it's a kind of eighth head. But it was really a part of that seventh. And speaking from a broad historic perspective, it's an eighth one. If we consider the Roman ones, the seventh, and its restorations, an eighth, but there's something more to it, because the final restoration, when five kings are fallen, one is and one is yet to come, and that final one is also the beast. The whole system is the beast and the man is the beast. Now this final man is a seventh. One is yet to come. Five fall, One is what is yet to come is the seventh, but is also an eighth. Because the numbering, therefore, is unclear until we look at the records of history. Let us now make note of something unique. With Napoleon, we have the fifth restoration. With Napoleon, we have the fifth restoration of the Roman government in the West, but the fourth restoration of the Roman Empire from a geographic point of view in the West. Because the Roman Empire, from the point of view of geography, was not smashed when the successors of the Ottos perished in 1254. With the death of Napoleon, we have the close of 42 months or 1260 years. Let me correct a statement there that was totally erroneous. With the destruction of his empire, not his death, please, in 1814, we have the close of 1260 years from the beginning of the restoration of the Roman world in the West, which began in 554. 554 plus 1260 takes you to 1814. Waterloo took place the next year, which was not the close of his empire, but an attempt to get it back. After that, you and I know that the next period in which the Roman Catholic Church has dominated politically Europe, we must come to the time of Mussolini and Hitler. And Mussolini made a concordat in 1929 and restored the empire slightly later and joined with Adolf Hitler on the other side of the Alps. And Mussolini restored the Roman Empire in southern Europe and northeastern Africa. And north of the Alps, Adolf Hitler restored the Roman Empire. And he called it what? Listen carefully. He called it the Third Reich. But look, I already told you from a German perspective, there was one Reich from the days of Otto to the collapse of the power of the Habsburgs at the time of the rise of Napoleon. That was one empire from the German point of view. That was the first empire from 962 to roughly 1806. What are you going to do then with Hitler's defining Nazi Germany in the Greater Reich as the Third Empire? Where was the second? Where was the empire between Napoleon, who restored the Roman Empire in the West, and Mussolini and Hitler, who restored it again in the second quarter of this century? Well, what was the second empire? Have you ever thought about the Second Empire? That was a restoration by the Prussians that began in 1871 to 1918 and was called the Second German Empire. It was the Second German Restoration of the Roman Empire, and it was Protestant dominated. It was every bit as evil as Napoleon's was. In terms of the horrors, anyone who knows history knows that the destruction of the First World War was far greater than anything that took place in Europe under Napoleon's restoration. And yet we ourselves have never really focused in on the fact that it was such a catastrophic war that it created the League of Nations to try to end all such terrible wars. Now look what has happened. From our perspective, we have, and let us count, we have Justinian's empire in the West as the first, and Charlemagne's the second. From our perspective, of the government on which the woman dominates, The Germanic Saxons, the Ottos, and those who succeeded was the first. The fourth restoration was an Austrian-German restoration, not a Northwest-German restoration. The fourth restoration of government was the Habsburgs. The fifth was Napoleon. And the sixth restoration on which the woman dominated was that of Hitler and Mussolini, the Axis across the Alps. And one is yet to come. Those are the seven on which the woman sits. But from another perspective, you have the following. You have the actual geographic restorations of the empire by Justinian. That agrees, the same number. Charlemagne, that's the second one. Otto, that's the third. But from the geographic point of view, it lasted all the way from the Germanic to the Austrian without a break, and was the third restoration only. And Napoleon's was the fourth, and the Kaiser's was the fifth, and Hitler and Mussolini was the sixth. And one is yet to come. So from that point of view, there are seven. But now, take another look. How about the eighth? Let's look at it this way. From the government of the Roman Empire, on which the woman sits, there be seven, but one she doesn't sit on, there are eight, we have as follows. From the government of the Roman Empire, we have Charlemagne, Justinian is the first, and Charlemagne's realm is the second. Otto's is the third, and the Habsburgs is the fourth. Napoleon is the fifth, the Kaisers was the sixth, and Hitler and Mussolini were the seventh, and what is yet to come was the eighth. Now what we have, for those who might be critical of the Bible, we have a very clear perspective that when John, not understanding here what he wrote very much, referred to this system, the eighth one, this is the eighth restoration of government. It is the seventh empire, and the seventh one in which the woman sat. But there is one that the woman did not sit on, that was also a governmental restoration and a geographic and imperial restoration from the point of view of the geography of the nation. And we have completely overlooked the Protestant Prussian restoration of the Roman Empire called the Second Empire, the Second Reich. Hitler's was the third. From our point of view, the First Reich, in this sense of the German nation, was that of Otto, the second one was that of the Habsburg, the third was that of the Kaiser, and the fourth was Hitler. But you see, the very fact that we see eight restorations is recorded here when it says this thing is the eighth one. But the fact that it also says in the Bible there are only seven governments is very, there are only seven true restorations. Because Daniel never saw more than three horns uprooted and seven to follow. So Daniel clearly shows that God knew and planned that geographically speaking, there should be only, through history, seven geographic restorations. There should be only seven governmental restorations on which the woman sits. But that there should be, in fact, eight governmental restorations, one of which the woman did not sit on. And that one of the restorations, which is the German First Reich, had in fact a break of 19 years in its midst. And it was truly two restorations of government, one in Germany and one in Austria. Now I am starting out this, and we may continue it in the Bible study or somewhere else. But we clearly now see something that we didn't. If you had been here in 1871 and had seen this restoration called the Second Reich, your perspective might have been clouded if you had been thinking only in terms of what you had been hearing or casually reading. But we now perceive here, without any question, that when fire falls, one is, that was a generation ago, and one is yet to come, that we are on the threshold of a final restoration of the Roman Empire that is going to be Catholic dominated, and we are looking for no others, because we are told that the woman rides on seven, and we have already perceived that the Catholic Church had agreements with six of these restorations. So she has already ridden on the governments of six. She has dominated the imperial restoration, geographically speaking, of six. And the reason for the confusion in history is just this peculiar thing that, as the Bible calls it, either the seventh or the eighth, so the German Restoration was one empire with two governments in succession, one in Germany, one in Austria. And there was one restoration which was Protestant, in which the woman never sat. I don't think we've ever focused on this, but I think it is time that we took a careful look at what has happened, and if we treat history with care and respect, we're also likely to treat current events with the care and respect that is due. And do not hastily draw conclusions about the nature of the present crisis here, which some have been wont to do. We should be careful about drawing any conclusion until we have sufficient facts to know whereof we really speak. I hope that at some time you can glance at such things as the Encyclopedia Britannica on this subject and have a clear view of what has occurred. And then you will see that in each of these cases we have something unique. And I want to end with one thought. When Justinian restored the empire in the West, it was also the Byzantine in the East. When Charlemagne restored in the West, there was also the Byzantine Empire in the East. When Otto restored it in the West, there was also the Byzantine in the East. When the Habsburgs restored the government in the same empire in the West, there was also the Byzantine Roman Empire in the East. You see, both legs were there. When Napoleon dominated Europe and West, there was a struggle, as there sometimes was, with the Western Roman Empire and the Byzantines in the East. There was a struggle with the remaining part of the empire which represented the East now, because ultimately the Turks had overthrown Byzantium. The Turks had overthrown.
There were two empires, one Napoleon's and the other the Habsburgs. And in this case, Napoleon dominated the two. But that realm of the Habsburgs continued. And there was later a German restoration, so that there was, interestingly, the same Habsburg power, which was Catholic, and a Protestant restoration of the Roman Empire on which the Church did not sit. Then there came the time, and the Habsburgs were overthrown in 1918 just as well as the Kaiser. And then you have Hitler and Mussolini. The obscure period lies ahead. There is going to be a restoration of 10 nations acting as a unit, giving their power to a single man. But at this point in time, we can go through history and we actually see that there never was only one Roman Empire. You look at all maps that I know of the Second World War, and we had enemies and we painted all Europe either red or black, whatever it was. And we never realized that in reality, as the Europeans themselves looked at it, there was a German restoration in the north called the Third Reich, and a Roman Empire in the south and northeast Africa, with Libya, parts of Egypt for a time being, Eritrea, Ethiopia, Italian Somaliland, some of the isles of the Mediterranean. There were two restorations. Now it is time, and I have to tell you, if I were to tell you that we're only looking for just a Western Roman Empire of 10 nations, I would not tell you what Daniel has said. Because Daniel clearly shows that this system has two ways. And there has always been an East, and there's always been a West. Or maybe the image turned around, and in Hitler and Mussolini's day, there was the North and South, but it's incidental. It's not called an Eastern and a Western leg, it's called there's a right and a left. On that image are five toes on each foot. As far as we know, there's only one ultimate emperor, just like there was one original Nebuchadnezzar. There is not a Hitler and a Mussolini. There's only one ultimate emperor, one ultimate ruler who's coming in Europe. One beast, not two, were cast into the lake of fire. That clear, no doubt. But it's made up of 10 toes or 10 horns. That's the last head, which is either an 8th or a 7th, depending on how you count. And the remarkable thing is that on that image in chapter 2 of Daniel, 5 of the 10 were on one foot and 5 of the 10 were on another. But what we have right now in history and our experience was 6 in the West and then 9 in the West. And what we're going to have 3-4 years from now, I don't know yet. But my impression is that we're going to end up with 5 nations dominated by Catholicism in one structure, 5 nations dominated by Catholicism in another structure, of which the common market, now the 9, or the 6 as it previously was, in my estimation, is only one. And is going to be the other foot. I do not know how this is going to develop. Whether it will be a link-up of the common market in the West and Comic-Con in the East as a result of the significance of a Polish Pope who will break those people away even though they retain the same economic system. The Pope has said clearly, brethren, that the church is above economic systems. That we can have a restoration of the Roman Empire that is socialist, communist, or fascist, and it's still the restoration of the Roman Empire. That's what he said. Because economically, you can be a communist and a baptized Catholic. You don't have to be an atheist. The communist is not necessarily an atheist. Don't make that false assumption. There are many people in Italy who were communists, baptized Catholics, who without any question think European and not Soviet Russian. So I presume that we have yet a sufficient time that a number of things that are not now immediately on the scene have yet to take place, which will mean a breakdown of the Iron Curtain and a link up in some way economically and geographically of nations on one side and nations on the other. This means that in terms of where we are in prophecy with respect to Daniel and Revelation, we have some things yet to occur that are not all going to be fulfilled in the next weeks or months. Mr. Armstrong sees his role as of some years yet. And I think it would be unwise to estimate or to underestimate his duration, or the slowness with which some things politically move before it happens, and then when it does, it moves so fast. You'll remember how many years ago it was when we first thought of it, and now it is here. And that's what's going to take place. I'll continue this theme as time permits.